The women's marches that took place last year on the day after Inauguration Day didn't just take place in Washington. That's the sound of Charlotte's March. And women's marches occurred all over the world. They ended up being the largest ever single-day protest in American history. Women in the Me Too movement have very specific reasons for taking part. Women involved in the march, as well as the men who marched, had a variety of concerns.
Child or job, we should not have to choose.
Love, not hate, makes America great.
Women's rights are human rights.
I am no longer accepting the things I cannot change. I'm changing the things I cannot accept.
Standing with Planned Parenthood, climate change.
I choose hope over fear.
This is America, so fight like you got a pair of ovaries.
The voices of those who marched in Charlotte last year. Those marches energized women, even those who didn't take part. But some wondered about their lasting impact. Did they signal the beginning of a new women's movement? What have those who marched been doing since that day? What is next? We're going to find out. The women's marches were not a one and done. In fact, there's another scheduled in Charlotte for this Saturday. And we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking with three women who were part of the marches last January and who will be taking part in this weekend's march. Jan Anderson is president and coordinator of the Charlotte Women's March, a retired civil engineer. She helped organize a bus trip to last year's march in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Kelly Finley is a senior lecturer in women's and gender studies at UNC Charlotte and is founder and executive director of Girls Rock Charlotte. You've been scribbling notes furiously during the first part of the program. Welcome back to you as well.
It's a great conversation. Thank you.
She participated in last year's Charlotte March, is on the planning committee for this year's March, and Allison Jacobs is part of the bus tour that went to D.C. in 2017. Since then, she's been active in the Social Justice Committee of the Charlotte Women's March, and she's also a principal consultant of ROI Impact Consulting and currently serves as a WFAE board member. We say that in the interest of full disclosure. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike.
Women came out in force last January. There were it looked like every woman in America was marching in Washington, D.C. and around the country. By the end of the year, women were having a different impact on the world. And from the conversations that you've had among other women, either at the march last year or in the year that has come, the years that preceded the march or in the year that has followed that march, could you have predicted the impact that women are currently having on society today? I'm not sure which one of you to ask that question of. Everybody's pointing to Kelly and to Jan. So, Kelly, I'll start with you. Jan, I'll go to you. Kelly.
I think you could have predicted this. There was a groundswell after the election, the big surprise election, and a lot of fear, a lot of concern. And I was fortunate enough to be here in that Charlotte moment and the Charlotte March. And there were a lot of parents, a lot of families, a lot of community members who wanted to, make it known in Charlotte, make it known to our community and to our nation that we stand in solidarity, that there is always hope and power in the people. And so I definitely think it was easily predictable, especially if you understand history. And I think it was interesting when you asked Jessica earlier, when you talk about the various different social movements that are happening all in concert with one another today, that's happened in the past. And we know well what has happened as a result of those coming out of, for example, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and the major political and cultural shifts that took place. And I definitely think, with my academic hat on, that we are poised at that moment yet again.
There's always a pushback to change because people don't like change.
The backlash.
Is that pushback, are you seeing it, first of all? Is the pushback coming from people who don't want to lose power or give up power or share power, or is there something else at work here?
No, by definition, that is what backlash is. It's a disproportionate reaction, when someone is trying to take what you perceive to be what you are entitled to, your power, your privilege. And I definitely think that could be, encapsulated in what happened in 2017, and we have seen it in the past with history, when it comes to racism, sexism, homophobia, and so forth. So, from a long view of history, backlash and movements can be quite predictable, but when you're sitting in the storm of them in the moment, they feel like, lightning in a bottle.
So, Jan, when you were on this program last year, right after the march, you said that the Women's March on Washington was a beginning. Were you right?
For the Charlotte Women's March, it certainly was. We had a meeting right after the march There were 45 women on my bus. I thought that would be the size of the meeting. 250 women showed up. We had a membership of 600 for most of last year, and in the last month, we've tripled that with interest in the march this year. Mm. We are certainly woke, and we certainly are not where we want to be yet. And the Charlotte Women's March has changed from a march to a movement by all of the activities we did this past year. We weren't just sitting around waiting for the next march. We've formed 8 interest groups, and we've been actively working for change in our community.
And you're on the Social Justice Committee, Rosalind, and I'm wondering how you see the Me Too movement. The year began with the march. It's kind of come to the 2017 came to an end with Me Too being in the spotlight. Is that the natural outgrowth of these marches? Is that something that you concentrate on in the social justice area?
Well, racial and social justice is much more, it's more broad-based than Me Too. Mm-hmm. It really focused on, so I think we have to take into consideration the events that preceded the election here and how this community, the awareness here about racial injustice was heightened. I think that sort of laid the groundwork for the events and the way that the Charlotte Women's March organization evolved into the separate group. So I would say that the social justice is as much focused on racial justice in this community as anything else.
And one of the criticisms that has been levied at these marches last year, the march on Washington and perhaps even in Charlotte and elsewhere around the country, was that women of color didn't participate to the degree that white women did. And was that because they didn't feel welcome, because they're not connected as together as well as white women are? Is it a social capital thing? What was going on there? Because this affects them, obviously, too.
So there are a couple of things. I'll say that I attended the D.C. march. I got the last seat on the bus with Jan. I was very fortunate. I did not attend the Charlotte march. My observation, my experience from D.C. was that it was very well attended by women of color.
Okay.
Moreover, I was impressed by the cross-pollination of issues. So I saw lots of white men and women carrying Black Lives Matter signs and chanting Black Lives Matter. So I think that, again, I don't know what happened here, but my experience there was something different. I will say historically, your first guest talked about, you guys talked about the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas issue. I would offer that it was a bit more nuanced than that. I would say that if Anita Hill had been a white woman with Clarence Thomas as a black man, I think the outcome of that would have been quite different. And so, historically, there has been a schism between women of color and white women in the women's movement.
You told WFAE's David Borax that you saw Trump's election as, quote, an affront on women, and women were not going to give up their hard-earned progress. That was the undercurrent of all the marches, I believe, around the country. Has that resolve held through the year? Has it grown in any way?
Well, that comes from me being a retired engineer with 40 years in the business. And so when Kelly speaks, I feel like I am the history she's talking about. I was in college in the 60s with all of the movements, the women's lib movement, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War movement. We were moving on everything back then, I think.
And now we can barely move.
We gained some rights back then, and then those women of my generation got jobs, hunkered down, and did our best to advance. And the women on our bus were a lot of women who were senior in their jobs and retired successfully from careers. We felt like we had worked hard to get where we are, and we were not giving up those rights. Now, what that also means is that we haven't gotten as far as we want to be. And the benefit of what's happening now is that we can have a conversation out loud about this. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, going back to the Anita Hill thing and stuff, I think what happened with that whole thing was once it was over, people stopped listening to the conversation. And people were generally men in leadership roles. Women were still having that conversation, but quietly, because we were told it didn't matter what happened to us, because it would be ignored. Now it's not going to be ignored anymore.
You talked about the fear that surrounded, that was kind of an undercurrent at the marches, among the participants in the marches, Kelly. What were those fears, and were they justified? This was in anticipation of what President Trump might accomplish, as having run as a candidate and been elected. were they justified?
Absolutely. I mean, we have on record a presidential candidate at the time who is now president who verbally spoke of sexually assaulting. That's not necessarily the correct term, sexually harassing women. And so those words to come through the airwaves to all the parents and mothers to girls in this nation strikes fear and anger and resolve. And so it was very real. It's very palpable. But also think of, so when we talk about it from a gender lens, you have that very real fear that I definitely think that helped to inflame the Me Too and Time's Up movement. But also look at, you know, DACA issues, immigration issues, racism and LGBTQ that we were coming out of as well. And everything that his platform stood poised to undo. There was definite real fear, but there was also resolve. And I think that's, you know, very important to understand. It's resolve that absolutely not. You know, you heard people from 3 to, you know, 80 to 85 that day in strollers and everything going down the streets here of Charlotte with some pretty interesting language I probably can't share on the radio right now, that they're not going back.
Only the president can say things like that. You said that a lot of the people, and this is true, if you look at the crowd at all these marches, a lot of the people that came out had never done this before. They were not rabble-rousers. They were not people who picked up signs and protested ever in their lives. You said that this event changed them in some way. How?
Definitely. Well, you know, I think about many of us heard Oprah speak on, you know, the Golden Globes, and she talked about, you know, when she addressed girls directly to the lens, a new dawn is coming. But that dawn doesn't arrive without work and effort and engagement. And so what we saw this past time, this past March, what we're going to do again this coming Saturday is that engagement. And that's what, you know, when it comes to you think about the power of youth, it's the power of a voice, but it's also action together. And you need to bring those two together. And a march is just one way, one powerful and important way to make that happen.
We only have a couple of seconds left in this segment, but how many people are you expecting for this march? And the weather will be nice for this march on Saturday. How many people are you expecting?
Well, we definitely think there will be at least 5,000 people marching, women and men and children. Please come out. And it could be much, much larger, especially since the weather's going to be good.
Yes, it's going to be in the mid-50s with sunshine. We're going to come back and talk more about this movement, these marches, etc., when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the women's march from last year and the one coming up in Charlotte on Saturday. It begins Saturday at First Ward Park at 10 o'clock with speeches in the park, and then the march proceeds at noon. Some of the people responsible for that are sitting around this table. Jan Anderson is the president and coordinator of the Charlotte Women's March. Kelly Finley, senior lecturer in women's and gender studies at UNC Charlotte, the founder of Girls Rock Charlotte, and Rosalind Allison Jacobs on the Social Justice Committee of the Women's March in Charlotte and a member of the board here at WFAE. We have some emails that came in from people. Autumn emailed us some reasons why she is marching. Affordable access to birth control, equal pay, affordable child care, and the ability to go to work and not be sexually harassed are all issues that are important to me, she says. Just like last year, my husband, myself, and our girls will be marching for our community, for our sisters, and for our girls' futures. Sheila emails, born in the 50s, I grew up watching protests for justice, civil rights, women's rights, and change in general. Last year when I joined my fellow sisters, it was the most moving and powerful experience of my life. Walking with women of all ages and all races was inspirational. We were there out of love for each other and love of country. There were young girls who participated and witnessed their mothers and their grandmothers standing and speaking truth to power. I was going to ask the three of you what that march meant to you and what this weekend's march means to you. Jan, I'll start with you.
It was the way I could get out of bed in the morning after the November elections. I went to Washington, and the march in Washington was a way for me to get energized to come back and act, which is why we formed the Women's March Group here, so that we can work throughout this year to affect change. And in 2018, our goal is to get both women and men elected to office who are like-minded and who will pass and enact legislation that supports those issues that women find important.
Rosalind.
For me, it was my patriotic obligation. I felt that it was my duty to show up, that what happened was not acceptable. The results of the election do not represent America. And I, at my core, I needed to physically be with people. I needed some reassurance that there were still people who could not go along with the results of the election.
Kelly?
Well, I was really tempted to go to D.C., and I really wanted to. But because I am one of the leaders of a youth organization, I thought it was important to stay here in our community. And it was powerful to march with our youth, with my own daughter. When you interviewed Jessica earlier, she talked about that there is a power differential. And I think it's important for, us to remember that our girls in many groups are raised in this country and in this world not knowing or experiencing their power. So to be able to do that together, as a parent, as a community leader, as an educator, is critical. It is that next thing, once you use your voice, now you have to act. And marching is one of those most powerful, memorable ways to do so.
The reason behind the march last year was to, protest what you saw as the impending shift in position that would be coming in with the Trump administration. And say we're not going to allow this to happen if we can stop it. What is the reason behind this march this year? Is it the same thing? Is it reaction to policies that Trump has actually followed through on? Has he been as onerous as you thought he would be, and that's why we have to have yet a second march?
Before Jan answers, I just want to say that the tone that was set on the bus by Jan and others from the outset was, we are going to Washington to march for what we believe in. This is not an anti-Trump march for us. This is going to advocate for what we are for. Jan?
Do you need to add to that? You may not need to add to that.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Very important. No, the other thing I would just say is what I'm seeing this year now with the response we've gotten for the march is this is no longer about Trump. This is bigger than Trump. This is about social change and respect and dignity for women.
Okay. Because I asked, when two of you were on this program, I mean, Kelly and Jan, you were here last year on this program, if the women and men who marched on Washington and on Charlotte and around the country, if they were all liberals, if you found any conservatives in your midst, what was the makeup of that crowd? What do you anticipate the makeup of the crowd will be this time?
A lot of women's issues go beyond political boundaries, that's for sure. And starting with birth control, if you want to start with one that's obvious, I don't know of any women out there who are anti-birth control. There are a few, but not many. That's something that goes across lines. Dignity, equality, respect are terms that go beyond any kind of political system whatsoever.
Because Mary emails, pro-life women are not welcome at this event, so it would be more appropriate to call it the Pro-Choice Women's March. What do you say to that?
I'd like to answer that because I've gotten an email similar. It might have been from the same person. We welcome all women of all persuasions as long as you respect other people's opinions. We are not pro or anti anything. We respect everyone for what they believe in.
This may answer Amy's email, too. I did not participate, she said, in the Women's March last year. Many marchers used it as an anti-Trump rally just to exclaim their distaste for him. I'm all for women having equal treatment. We should have equal pay and feel safe from sexual harassment. However, I'm also pro-life and would not want my marching to be confused for supporting abortion in any way. It would be nice to have a women's march that could still show love and support for women's issues without being extreme left or right in order to include all women. Is that possible, given the genesis of these marches?
We have members who are pro-life. I know of a few friends of mine in particular that I know where they stand on those issues, but they feel like the greater issues are for women's equality. And we can stand together as long as we respect one another, mm-hmm. as well as one another's issues.
Can that message get out, or is it still just too connected to Donald Trump and the reason it sprang from Donald Trump last year, and therefore people just see that in it automatically?
No, I think that message is getting out because we're seeing just this past week some horrible research and data that's coming through on maternal mortality rates in the United States, and it's disproportionately affecting rural women and women of color, meaning mothers are dying still in birth here in the United States. So when we talk about, you know, pro-life or, you know, and all this language, it's a vast oversimplification of a huge umbrella that affects all, which is women's health and access to comprehensive women's health care for all women and all genders in the United States. So, you know, if someone feels one way or the other on a particular issue, mm-hmm. we cannot reduce, you know, a woman's biology to one particular issue. And that has been the mistake over decades and decades. And we're just not having those conversations anymore. It's about reproductive justice. It's about you have the right to make the decision for your overall health care at every time and every place.
Ideas are transmitted through words. Words matter. And sometimes words fail us. And one of you referenced you've been working to support what you call, quote, like-minded individuals, end quote. What does that mean to you? Because it might mean something different to the listener.
So who's going to show up on Saturday? This is related to your question. I would hope that it would be some men and women voters who now have buyer's remorse. So for me, like-minded means that the direction, the tone, the tenor, the vulgarity, the way that our democracy is being undermined and has devolved under this administration is not acceptable. And I would hope that we could find common ground over the direction that we want our country to take, regardless of what you feel about pro-choice, pro-life, birth control. Can we not find common ground about basic decency, respect for human life, and come together around that?
You're nonpartisan. I want to make that clear. You're nonpartisan, but you are speaking your minds to office holders and office seekers, and you are supporting candidates. Am I correct in that? So if you're supporting candidates, are you supporting Democratic candidates? Are you supporting Republican candidates? Are you supporting Libertarian? Are you supporting people simply based on their background, their experience, their ideas? Who are you supporting?
Okay, let me be clear. The Charlotte Women's March will support candidates who support our values. We do not endorse candidates, and we recommend that our membership find and support their candidates of their choice. And we have had candidates of many persuasions, several persuasions, I should say, so far, who are part of our group and have actually been elected to office.
And are they Republicans, some of them?
I know, yeah.
They are? You sound a little iffy on that.
But. Well, I know one, so... We only have a few who've actually run and been elected so far because we've only been around for a year.
Well, according to the Rutgers Center for American Women in Politics, the number of potential women candidates for the U.S. House this year, 2018, is double that of 2012. 161 in 2012, 354 candidates so far in 2018. Can you give any credit to the awakening that occurred because of the women's marches last year, or do you attribute this rise in the number of female candidates to something else?
No, I absolutely think it's, you know, in great part to the 2017 march, and I've heard some people say the theme for 2018 is power to the polls. Whoever you're electing is your choice, obviously. But, you know, and to speak to Rosalind's point, we need to turn up the volume on civic engagement in this culture again. We need to defend democracy in this culture again and engage our democracy. You know, when we have looked at voter turnout numbers across different generations and populations, they've been pathetically sad and disheartening until this past year. We have seen, you know, entire precincts and states even, you know, completely flip polls. So I think it's something to think about when you're seeing all these women engage their democracy. You know, I'm not really as concerned as to what their political party is. I'm just glad to see more people and more voices, and more identities in the mix. It's critical to the future of our democracy.
Despite the criticism by some that the marches last year were particularly lily white women, and you already said, Rosalyn, that was not true. That was not your experience. Kelly, you say you saw a new ethic of inclusion in last year's march. Why do we have this criticism on the one side, and for those who participated and observed carefully, they didn't see the same thing?
Well, I know historically, as Rosalyn mentioned, there have been schisms within women's movement and social justice when it comes to racism and sexism and homophobia. But in 2017, time's up on that, you know, lie. If you look at the young women who, in particular, led and, you know, started the push for the 2017 Women's March, you know, they, with intent and purpose, were one of the most diverse, inclusive groups I've ever seen on a platform before. We have learned the lessons of the past historically, and honestly, it is a lot of young women and women of color and transgendered issues and immigrants and so forth and undocumented individuals who are leading this cause, and that's exactly how it should be. So I think anyone who is still having that call perhaps are hearkening back to the 70s and 80s when that was a rightful critique of the feminist movement, but that's not where we are now. Anybody who's woke about feminism knows that is not where we are right now.
Well, the marches last year and the march this Saturday in Charlotte are billed as women's marches, but you're talking about a lot of different issues here. You've referenced LGBTQ issues, you've referenced, transgender is part of that. You've referenced other things. I would think Black Lives Matter comes into this. So is the name Women's March accurate? Or is it limiting?
Women's rights are human rights. They're everybody. And everybody has at least one woman in their lives, their mother. They've got sisters and daughters and cousins and parents and grandparents. So women's rights is just looking at things from a different perspective than traditionally, which has been a predominantly male perspective. So that's where we're coming from with this, is we're just saying, join us because we support you and your interests.
And can we not just acknowledge that women are taking the lead on organizing? That's what Charlotte Women's March means. Women are taking the lead on organizing around human rights and addressing human rights issues.
Okay. Bob in Villis, is that how you say it? I've never heard of Villis, North Carolina. He emails, the Women's March and the Me Too movement are long overdue and necessary steps to expose the exploitation of women by men in positions of power. These same men and some women have used their position of power to economically exploit millions of our fellow citizens. The promise of America cannot be realized until the contributions of women and men are equal and must be honored by our leaders. Exploitation of any kind must be confronted and stopped. Meanwhile, Aaron emails, as a 30-year-old white male who lives in one of the most red districts in the state, I feel as if I'm fighting myself to keep my eyes and ears open. I know that it's my turn to keep my mouth shut and listen at this time. A question, how in the world has gender equality become a political partisan issue? Has it become one?
If you look at the way things are playing out in Washington, D.C., I would say yes.
How so?
Well, we've got two Democratic elected officials who have resigned. We have zero Republican elected officials who have been accused of sexual misconduct have resigned. Has it become political? You tell me.
Well, they're trying to maintain their majority.
Does that not then put political parties over patriotism and defending human rights, defending rights of women?
Is Charlotte the only place having one of these, what you're calling a remarch? Are we the only city doing this weekend, this Saturday?
Oh, no. It's more or less a grassroots movement this year. The national organization, I think, has a march scheduled for Las Vegas. In North Carolina, we know there are marches in Raleigh, Winston-Salem, Charlotte, and Asheville.
Are these marches the most important? Is the most important thing to get a turnout to make a point, or is the most important thing to use this as a touchstone to keep the movement energized? And I have 10 seconds. That's all I got.
It's absolutely all about the touchstone to keep the momentum, to keep the inspiration going, and to keep the collaboration working.
Kelly Finley with UNC Charlotte and Girls Rock Charlotte, Jan Anderson, President Coordinator of the Charlotte Women's March, and Rosalind Allison Jacobs on the Social Justice Committee of the March. It's this weekend.